Welcome everyone to Hero Craving Special Episode Number 2, and ladies and gentlemen, do we have a great treat for you. As always, I'm your host, Tyler Haynes, with the man himself, Chris Rivers.
Hola, mi amigos.
And for the first time ever, Chris and I are sitting down and interviewing with comicbook.com's Charlie Ridgely.
What's going on, guys? I'm happy to be here. I've been excited about this.
Now, welcome aboard. We've been really excited to have you out here. Of course, you know, being the Gothamite you are, or whatever the Gotham people call their fandom. Now, to give you a little backstory on how I came to met and interact with Charlie is that, you know, I followed comicbook.com's social media and website for maybe 3-4 years now. And I decided I wanted to get into journalism more, you know, started with video games. And then I was like, you know what, entertainment journalism is a lot of fun too, because I've got a lot of interest in a lot of segments, I guess is what you could say, a lot of topics. And so I started following my favorite writers on social media and started paying attention to what people were writing, what I could improve on, how other people did their stuff. And that's how I came across Charlie's, because a lot of his writing was really well done. I loved his... You could always tell people's writing style and, I want to say, personality in the writing. And so I found Charlie. And then, you know, we started having conversations about, on Twitter, about, you know, Gotham. We've talked about anything and everything. We've even talked about journalism some and ways for me to improve and stuff like that. And so I started talking to him, and then I really noticed he lived here in Tennessee by some of his tweets and retweets. And then, so I talked to Chris. I was like, you know, hey, this is a potential, you know, he follows the show. He writes recaps for the shows we talk about, and he's interviewed some of the people. What do you think about interviewing him ourselves? And we thought that was a great idea, and so we decided to have you on the show. And I think we personally met, I think it was last year at Heroes and Villains in 2017.
We've talked a few times. That was the first time I think, you know, we've met, either that or there was a couple of conventions here in town that we were both at. I feel like Walker Stalker last year you might have been at too.
Right.
The one here in Nashville, I can't remember, but I've seen you a few times since then. You know, you were an extra in Brandon's short film that I was producing, and we hung out all day on that set and just some different things. So you know, I'm glad to finally do this. I'm excited. You guys have been, you know, really stepping up your game and doing the podcast and, you know, working on doing some editorial stuff. And I really appreciate, you know, y'all following for so long. And you know, I'm glad to finally jump the ship and come over here and talk with you guys. I'm excited.
Well, awesome, man. Thanks for it. I mean, again, like, we're really excited to have you out. So for people who aren't familiar with your work and career, you know, what is your, how did you get started into journalism, and what are you like working on and mainly covering right now?
Oh, wow. It's many little stories wrapped into one. Cause I've been all over the place, man, you know, doing all kinds of different, all over the place career wise. You know, originally I went to school for special education, and I ended up switching about halfway through college and got a degree in marketing. And I left college and I was working in youth ministry. You know, I did that some during college, and I started doing a little bit, you know, as a profession after college. And then the whole time I've always wanted to be involved in this industry. You know, when I was in college, I acted a lot. That was my whole, I was a big theater guy. I was in all kinds of plays and stuff in college, and did a couple of short films and things like that. And I wanted to do that as I grew. But then throughout college, I kind of took up the idea of creative writing and, you know, wanting to write screenplays and things like that. And I did a little bit of it, but I was so caught up in just doing college stuff, not just school, but like having fun and, you know, being with friends. And I didn't do a lot of it as much as I wanted to, which I wish I would have, because I feel like there was such a connection with other people, and it was a very, like, it was easy to get people around you that were doing the same thing that could encourage you, and you guys could bounce ideas off each other and things like that. But I didn't, and I left and went into ministry, and that really wasn't super for me. And I started working in retail. I worked at REI for almost 2 years in Maryland where I lived, and then I transferred to the one down here in Nashville. When I moved, because my girlfriend at the time lived here, and we had gone to college together. We were friends through college and we started dating, and I was in Maryland and she was here, and I moved down. And, so then I got into that, and then I worked at the zoo for a while. I was a camp counselor at the Nashville Zoo, And I ended up going back to special ed before I got into journalism because I was just kind of out of luck and there was nothing else to do. And I was looking at possibly going back into education. And so I worked as a special ed TA in a high school around here for a few months. And then that was when I got the call to come interview for comicbook.com. For a while there, I'd probably been 6 or 7 months freelancing for comicbook.com. A lot of that was due to Brandon, who, Brandon Davis, he covers The Walking Dead mostly and all kinds of things that he, all of our video stuff at comicbook.com. And he and I became friends. We were doing a web series thing together. We had both been casting and we got to know each other and he kind of brought me on and got me freelancing and stuff. And then eventually that led, when we got a new editor in chief, he wanted to bring some new hires on and he wanted someone who could not only just be a regular desk writer, but who could back up Brandon with The Walking Dead. I knew The Walking Dead well enough and deep enough to go kind of alongside Brandon and do that work with him because it was too much. We have our own Walking Dead Facebook page, and so it was the coverage we do for that show was almost getting to the point where it was too much for one person. And so they wanted someone who could kind of back him up in that, and I was able to interview and get the job there. And so I started writing full time for them back in I guess the end of September, beginning of October of 2016. And so I haven't been full time for super, super long. I guess about a year and a half. But yeah, it was a very tumultuous road to get to that point. But kind of as I was doing those odd jobs and stuff, and I was writing creatively, as I remember my first feature screenplay, I was doing a lot of writing, some writing for web series. I kind of started writing for journalism type things. I had a lot of ideas that weren't just creative that I wanted to talk about and share and say, and I thought that I kind of had the ability to use that voice. And there was a website called moviepilot.com, and they used to have this program where you could, or this the ability for anyone to just log on and make an account and start writing. And I think they've gone to mostly video now, which is kind of sad because they're a really cool program. They launched the whole creators.co, and it was literally you got on, you made an account, and you started writing and publishing. And if they liked like what you were writing, they would kind of share it on their pages and stuff, and they would do some little edits and stuff. And if they liked what you were doing, they would get in touch with you. So I logged on and wrote this article about horror movies and rules to fix horror. And they contacted me and they invited me to this program where they used to do it like once a quarter or twice a year or something, and they would teach you, how to write for this specific audience and how to, they really write online and compel, a headline and structure it the right way, and learning some and getting some help with your prose. And you had to write so many articles every week for this to keep the program going and all that. And I went through that with them, and then I went to a thing with them where you could get paid if you wrote enough. If people were reading it, you got paid based on how many people were clicking on your stories and things like that. And that's what ended up leading me to Comic Book. When I wanted to interview with Comic Book, I gave them these articles that I had written for Movie Pilots. So that was a really, really cool jumping off base. I'm kind of sad they're not doing editorial anymore, because that's what I would tell a lot of writers who ask me, like, hey, how did you get to this place? Like, hey, like, go to Movie Pilot, because you can do it for, like, you don't have to have someone say yes to you first.
Right.
You can just go in and you can write and you can basically forcibly show people, I can do this here. And there's other ways to do that, not just that site. There's people do blogs all the time. That was just a way of almost making it look legitimate. It was kind of like a blog, but you could publish it through another name and or through another, a website, not a different personal name. But yeah, all in all, it twisted me back and led me back over here to comic books. I'm really, I'm pumped to be here and doing that and doing video stuff. And I think the other part of the question you asked was about stuff I cover. I pretty much cover everything. Like, it's, Brandon is one of the few that kind of has, like, he's got Walking Dead and that's his baby, and it's become such a big force. And he does a lot of the Marvel movie stuff too. I write about everything under the sun. I write about the Marvel movies. I write
Yeah, I
about
know you're really excited for
stuff.
Black Panther. For that
Oh,
one.
dude, that's like, I am more excited for Black Panther than I've been for any superhero movie in a long time. I
Yeah,
think that
the
movie's
trailer that dropped, what was it, Monday night? And during
Monday
the,
night during the game,
oh,
yeah.
it was so
It was so
good.
good. And Kendrick's doing this whole soundtrack. I could talk about Black Panther for days. I think it's gonna be one of Marvel's top five grossing like opening weekend movies ever
Oh,
in
I
the
hope
US.
so.
It's gonna crush. I rarely ever buy tickets because I get to go to screeners and stuff. So And that between that and Movie Pass, I almost never pay for a ticket to the movies. But I pre-ordered my Black Panther ticket because I want to make sure that I feel like I'm contributing to this, because I love what this movie looks like and I love what it's going to become, and it's just so cool looking. But Gotham is like my main. My shooting, it's not my main focus at work because I spend so little time on it total when it's not in season. But I'm kind of the go-to Gotham person now. It used to be on someone else's shoulders and they're no longer with the company. And I was still newer when they were there covering it. And when they left, it was just kind of one of those, oh man, like someone needs to cover this week because we didn't talk about it. Charlie, you're free today, right? Like, can you knock this stuff out? And I just kind of grew into the show. That way. And then this season I've kind of been, you know, I try to have an interview every single week when there's an episode, if I can, you know, talking to different producers and actors on the show and just getting little scoops here and there. And, I've really grown in that this year. It's been cool, 'cause I've been able to do it, you know, from the get go. So I just kept up with it over the summer and what was going on and the casting things, and then jumped into the series and to every episode and be able to cover, you know, each and every week. And I've kind of, you know, built a little rapport there that's been nice to have, you know, from episode to episode. But I do a lot with Walking Dead. Like I said, you know, I cover a little bit of the CW stuff, not a ton. But I watch some of those shows. I like Legends and Riverdale a lot.
I didn't know you were a Riverdale fan.
Oh,
I know,
dude, hell yeah.
I know you and your wife watched This Is Us together. And
yeah, I haven't been as kept up. I haven't kept up with it the past like 6 or 7 episodes.
Oh, you're missing out.
Oh, I know. It was one of those, there was some kind of, we have the other site that covers pop culture stuff that isn't comic book related, and I was writing a bunch for them for a while. And they brought in a full-time TV person, which is great. I could kind of shift back over to comic book and focus on, you know, that stuff I really love. So when I was doing that, I was really focused on TV shows like that. But I haven't kept up with it the past few weeks, but that's one of the best shows on TV. But yeah, I mean, everything under the sun, comic, TV related, I at least have a toe in an understanding of. You know, some I watch and enjoy more than others.
Right.
You know, with Gotham being like my absolute favorite. Fear the Walking Dead, I don't know if anyone watches that. Like, that's one of the best comic book shows on TV right now. Fear the Walking Dead started as a weird spinoff that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think like one of the best. the first half of the season, of the first season.
It's not very good. But once you get into like the last 6 episodes of season 2, they kind of made a shift in how they wanted to approach the show, and it just took off. And season 3 was, I mean, one of the best full seasons of any Walking Dead property. Like, I put it right up there with season 2 of the original Walking Dead show. The villains they introduced, the character work they did. I mean, it's really, really cool. But yeah, all over. Just I feel like I've got a toe in everything. Gotham's the one that I can kind of claim as like, oh yeah, like this. I know this, and this is my thing.
Your big toe.
Yeah.
So, Charlie, before we get down into the creative questions that we have around Gotham, I wanted to get your take on the current ratings and what you think that means for the future of the show.
It's weird because I feel like, you know, 3 months ago we would have been having a very different conversation about this. Because we have this whole elephant in the entertainment industry that is Disney buying Fox.
Right.
And so that puts such a weird, I don't know how to say it, like it changes everything. And because I feel like Gotham, before that happened, you know, the ratings have been odd this season. They have not been great. We all know that. But personally, and I think a lot of Gotham people have felt the same way, and a lot of critics have felt the same way, Gotham this season has been better than it's ever been.
I absolutely agree.
The creators have found this perfect balance of campy comic book TV and just really serious, you know, drama. Like it's a really, really fine line that I feel like it was trying to find for a long time, and it kind of hit its stride in season 3 last year. But coming into this season, it has just been wow. And what Gotham is great at, as opposed to, you know, other shows, say on the CW, Gotham doesn't stop. You know, shows like Arrow get bogged down with a specific relationship or a side story that people may or may not like, but it slows the overall thing down. And Gotham has never had that trouble. I mean, at least since season 1, their side stories are all still exciting, and they just, it's like a breakneck pace. I mean, that whole, I think that 6 episode arc or whatever with Professor Pig is the best the show's ever been. I loved it. You know, Michael Cerveris is one of the best things that's ever happened to the show. But I loved the speed it's in. So I think it's gotten better. And unfortunately, that's come with weird ratings because it changed its night. And yeah, it went to Thursday nights, where it's up against things like Grey's Anatomy and Supernatural.
Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, like it's at a weird time, and there was a weird move by Fox. You know, I know they wanted to get Gifted, but Gifted didn't do any better than Gotham did on Monday night. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're going to look at possibly moving it back. But all in all, when the ratings were coming out, I was worried about it. But there was also that looming Disney Fox deal, and the fact that they know that it was going to perform less on Thursday nights. You know, for example, on ABC, Once Upon a Time moved to Friday nights, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. moved to Friday nights, and they're both doing way less than they were last year. But, and this goes for Gotham too, their Live Plus 3 numbers and Live Plus 7 numbers have still been really good. People are still watching Gotham. It's just coming at a later time. It's coming, you know, on the weekend when they're catching up. Like, people, the same amount of people are watching it. It's just changing. And so they're trying to figure out what the kind of the return on investment is. But now this Disney Fox deal has gone through, Fox is in a weird space because they're continuing things as they go right now because the purchase hasn't finalized, and it probably won't for another year. But Gotham is one of the few shows on Fox that isn't produced by 20th Century Fox. So when Disney purchases Fox, it does not purchase the television network. That's a separate thing. They purchase the studios. And so Disney will own things like The Simpsons that are made.
Which is
made
extremely weird to me.
Exactly. but they'll own things that were produced by 20th Century Fox, the studio, or 21st Century, whatever you want to call it, you know, by the television studio, but not the channel itself. So that leaves the channel itself with slots to fill and no studio producing them. So a show like Gotham, because for a while they're going to be in this transition of finding a new direction. They want to move toward, I think, more news and sports and things like that that aren't grounded in, you know, in scripts and things. But for a show like Gotham, they already have a deal with Warner Brothers, who produces it. All they have to do is business as usual, and they keep airing new Gotham episodes, and it's no skin off their back. They don't have to worry about creating something new. So for the next year or two, as this whole deal is being finalized and they're directions being worked out and stuff, a show like Gotham, I think, is in no trouble because it offers the network a good opportunity. You know, I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one of the shows that's in a similar place.
Love Andy
and Samberg. You know, I think that ratings aside, they have been bad, but like I said, they've been better in the on-demand things. I think when you combine that with this whole, you know, Disney Fox issue, I think Gotham actually gets helped by that, where a lot of shows are going to be hurt by that. Gotham will have a good opportunity. And there's also, you know, switching networks doesn't happen a lot, but we do have DC trying to launch their own streaming service and Warner Brothers getting heavier into television. If Fox decides to take away, you know, to go away and do all reality and sports and news, Warner Brothers still has the option to say, well, we want to keep airing Gotham. We think it can do better with, you know, looking at these on-demand numbers. You think maybe if we run it on our own streaming service, it might be better. There are opportunities to do that as well. So I was really worried about it when the season started off. When I started looking at those on-demand numbers and this Disney thing, I think that Gotham has a really good opportunity to be safe for a couple of years. I really appreciate that the writers and creators, you know, I've spoken with John Stevens earlier in the season. I talked to Brian Winbrandt a couple of times, and they both told me that they're very, you know, they're not looking ahead to next season. They have, you know, plans that they keep writing down, but they're focusing and putting all their energy and all their time and all of everything they've got, all their talent, into this season to make it as good as it can possibly be for fans, in the hopes that they can get a next season, obviously, but basically leaving it all on the table. And we see that in the show. We see how good it is. But I think they're in the back of their minds kind of ready for another season. It just kind of depends on whether they're going to be given it or not. But I think it's a good sign that they're, you know, giving everything they've got to this year while still having it on the back burner. Like, hey, we've still got ideas coming. We've still got things we want to do. You know, they have a whole running list of villains that they want to introduce, which I know that Calendar Man's been brought up a couple times, and that's something I keep every time I talk to him, hey, like, please do that for me. but, you know, that's, I know they've got ideas going forward. So I think that at least for season 5, because they also want to get to syndication. I know that's a big thing for Fox. They want to get to syndication. And so once they get into that 5th season, they'll reach that. And so, I mean, I would put down money that it'll at least go through next year.
That was actually my next question was, how much more does it help them that they're so close to hitting those syndication numbers?
Yeah, and I think the 5th season gives them that. And so I think that, you know, even if they were to do a 13-episode season 5 or a 18-episode season 5 and air it later, I think that works with them. I think that they're going to try to work something out with Gifted, because they renewed Gifted with those numbers. So I think they might try to see if there's some kind of 1-2 punch they can get from Gifted and Gotham together. You know, I think that, I mean, a lot of people watch Lucifer, but I don't think the people that watch Lucifer are the same people that watch Gifted or Gotham.
Right.
I think Lucifer's audience is a tad bit older. And so I think that, and they're not as comic oriented. And people that love the Lucifer comic, there aren't as many of those as that love the X-Men and Batman comics, you know? I think that putting those two together would be a smart move for Fox. And I think that the renewal of Gifted kind of says a lot about Gotham's future. So, I would, like I said, I would be, I'm 98% sure we'll get a 5th season at some capacity. But that obviously remains to be seen.
Now, all these number talks aside and done with, now we could get to the fun stuff, Chris. my question is, my first one is, do you think we will actually call Jerome the Joker?
No, it's never going to happen.
So what do you think his name will be for the show then? Are they just going to keep calling
him Jerome? I think he's just always going to be Jerome. You know, that was something else that, it's one of those questions that, like, it doesn't really matter as much to me, but I know it does to so many people. And so it's one that I always want to bring up when I'm doing some interviews, and especially with the showrunners. And when I talked to Brian Winbrand ahead of the finale, or a couple weeks before the finale in the winter, I was like, hey, look, like, what is your Jerome's coming back? Like, tell me about, and he's like, and I asked about the Joker, and he was very much like this. He's never going to be that. He is the kind of character that breeds, like, that makes way for the Joker. He's very much a Joker prototype. You know, he lays the groundwork for what will one day be the Joker, but that's not who he is. He is never going to take up that kind of mantle. He will always act that way. You know, in the promo for the back half of the season, he throws down that Joker card, and he has the sewed on face, and he wants to put a smile, and, like, all those things. And they're going to keep doing that, and they're going to keep driving you nuts with it. But it's one of those, they're never actually going to call him the Joker. I mean, it's, every time I ask, it is very much he's not the Joker, and we're not going to do that. Right. As much as I think that they might, I want to say they'll change their mind. I've gotten the same answer for long enough from that many people that I just think it's one of those, if you really want him to be the Joker, he can be, but they're never going to actually say that word.
Right.
Right. So is their intent then just going to be his character will serve as the inspiration for the character that becomes the Joker?
Right, and I think that's what they're kind of alluding to. But I don't think it's going to be one of those things where at the end of the series you see Jerome's dead body and then, you know, a young kid walk up and take the paint off his face and put it on his own. Like, we're not going to see that whole Dark Knight Rises Robin moment with that kind of character. It's just going to be one of those things that we see at the end of it. We see, okay, here's this legacy of Jerome and how that creates an opportunity for someone to then come and be the Joker because, I mean, you look at Jerome, and even though he's young, he's still a fully grown adult, you know?
Right.
He is a grown man, whereas Batman is not Batman. He's a kid, and even though he's not acting like one right now,
right,
he's a kid, and I think that kind of paves way for the opportunity for someone to become the Joker who's more in age with Bruce down the line, but it's not something I don't think we're going to see on the show. It's just going to be he's Batman now, so in our minds we know that there will be a Joker. It just, we're not going to see him on the screen.
one of the things with Cameron Monaghan, I think Monaghan.
Yeah, Monaghan. Yeah.
He so my wife has just recently started binge watching Shameless.
Yeah.
And every time like I walk by and she's watching it, and you know she's got it on the big screen, and I walk by, I'm like, nope, that's Jerome.
That's
still
Jerome.
Still can't get over that. But you know, do
he's
you.
He's one of the few. He's one of the few. I can't look past. I mean, he's a really talented actor. Like, it's not one of those take away from things. Like, he's done such a good job as Jerome. Like, I can watch David Mazouz and other things and be like, oh, David, what's up? Or I can, you know, watch. I was watching The Office. I'm binging The Office for like the third time, and I completely forgot that right after Pam and Jim start dating. I don't know if you guys watched The Office or not. If there's an episode where they corporate wants Michael to shoot a commercial, but it's not really a commercial. Like, it's not his creative. It's just like they stand and wave at the end, but he wants to take it in his own hands and make this whole commercial, whatever. And they go to the bar to watch the commercial, and they're all at that bar, and Drew Powell is the waiter at the bar. And he's talking to them, and like he hits on Pam, and I was like, oh my God, it's Drew. Like, I love that guy. And, you know, I can see these actors and these other things. And mainly it might be because I've talked to almost all of them at junk or like either at junkets or at conventions or on the phone, or I've seen them in some capacity. And to me, Cameron Monaghan, I haven't watched Shameless. I've only seen photos. So I've only seen him as Jerome, and he's such a twisted character. It's like, oh, well.
He's bipolar in that show too, and so
it's crazy.
Yeah, his and like I've stayed and watched a couple episodes with her, and it's crazy seeing him like act normal. Like I'm just waiting for the moment where he flips a switch or a coin or something and turns back into Jerome. It's really crazy watching him on that show. Now, Gotham has a lot of pods. I mean, you could call them that, or a mini series even. So
yeah, like, they have those like subtitle things.
Yeah, like right now we're doing The Dark Knight, and so my question to you was, what's your favorite pod of Gotham so far? And give you a little bit of time to think and everything. I've got mine, and Chris has got his, and I'll start with mine. I've got Wrath of the Villains. That's the big, Bruce leaves Alfred to live with Selina. He starts to get that little, it's where he finds out about who really killed his parents, and he's trying to go take him down. The Riddler starts developing more into a character, which I absolutely love and cannot wait till he's back, by the way. Arkham episodes with Doctor Strange, and I think even a little touch of Azrael is in that show as well.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, what's your favorite pod so far?
I had Mad City with the Mad Hatter and Alice and the Tetch virus. Ivy's transformation when Maggie Gia came onto the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
I don't want to interrupt you, Chris, but I'm really sad to see Maggie Gia go.
We saw her at the convention recently.
Yeah, Peyton List is great, and I think I love what she's going to do to Bruce in terms of messing him up, but I am really sad to see Maggie Gia go. Sorry to interrupt, wanted to get that off my chest. I know a lot of people are sad to see her go.
Yeah, Chris is the same way. He loves her.
I felt like she was a perfect Ivy, really. Especially for the way that they're doing it, to kind of, like you said earlier, dipping into that sort of over-the-top comic book type of feel, but also a seriousness. I felt like she could do both. The other thing from that pod was Penguin and Enigma's relationship developing. So,
now Mad City had the whole Penguin election. Was that in that pod as well?
I believe so. Let me double.
I believe
check.
So. Yeah.
Sitting here looking at it right now,
because that was a really crazy arc. But for me, I mean, I said it earlier, and I hate to I don't want to have a recency bias, but like this new the Dark Knight story arc has been my favorite ever. I mean, I think that it just the villains it's brought, it started with Scarecrow, who's going to be back again later in the season. And Ra's al Ghul, I hate calling him that. That's just what the show calls him.
He's
always a Ra's for me. But, he's going to be, I think he's going to play some, a lot more into it, even though he's dead. I think he's going to come back in Bruce's mind at least. And, but what I mentioned earlier, more than anything, Professor Pig has been my favorite villain on this show ever. I think of all the things they've done. I mean, obviously we love Penguin because he's been there since the beginning, and I love his arc. And Robin Lord Taylor is one of the funniest people I've ever talked to. He's such a great energy.
I'm
going
to try meeting
fun.
Him because I know he's coming to Nashville, I believe.
Yeah, for Heroes and Villains. He's coming back this summer. And I spoke with him for the first time actually this year, and he is just such an awesome dude. He's really he's so excited about what they're doing. And from an actor, you don't always get that. Mm-hmm. You know, you always get it from the showrunners because they want to be doing it. But from an actor to be into season four and be so hyped about something, I really love it. But, you know, we love characters like him and like Riddler who have been doing things for so long, but you got such a different energy and such a terrifying charisma that came with Professor Pig. And like,
absolutely.
He wasn't in the comics for very long, but he was a Grant Morrison creation, and Grant Morrison's just one of the most twisted, wonderful writers that we've ever seen. And I think that more than any villain that they've put on, Professor Pig captured that insanity so perfectly. And it was such a, he was scary, but he was also, there was so much, you know, pizzazz and vibrato that came with him. You know, when he was interrogating Jim that first time and he was like twisted around and he had the sausage in his face and, mm-hmm. you know, and then he had that whole musical episode. Like, it was really cool for me. I had spoken to Michael Cerveris at one point during the beginning of his arc. And he was such a great guy, so kind and so thoughtful, and he really dug into his character. But as I researched Michael Cerveris, he was a classic theater actor. He's a Tony Award-winning Broadway actor. Mm. And his biggest role that he's known for is playing Sweeney Todd on Broadway, on the Broadway revival.
Mm-hmm.
And now that was what he made a name doing, was Sweeney Todd. And so then in kind of that honor, Professor Pig has this episode where he cooks people into meat pies and sings about it. And it was a Sweeney Todd episode of Gotham.
Right. And
to me, that was such a cool thing for them to do, you know, was to get him involved in that, kind of go back to his roots and things like that. And I thought it was really, really neat. But his whole, from beginning to end, you know, he had a very closed arc. You know, I don't think we're going to worry about seeing Laszlo again.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see him again.
Unfortunately, because I could do a whole show watching him as the villain. But
right.
There were so many twists and turns through his story about what he was setting up.
No kidding.
And I think Gotham pulled off such a great, you know, curveball with Sophia having been behind everything. I mean, once her dad got shot, I kind of figured, like, okay, Sophia's behind her dad getting shot.
Yeah, I figured that was kind of like an easier one to figure out.
Right, but then that she's the one that brought in Laszlo in the first place, and that he's just this redneck who creates, he's an actor who creates serial killers. Like, it was such a cool idea and a great spin on a character that not many people know of. You know, if it wasn't for the Arkham games, hardly anyone who would know who Professor Pig is.
Right.
And I just, his arc, and you, like I said, you had Scarecrow. I think Sophia was a fantastic.
I love Crystal show. Reed.
You know, I got into Teen Wolf recently.
That's where I first know her from.
Crystal Reed a lot. I think she's a really, really talented actress that hasn't been on nearly enough, in my opinion. And, you know, you kind of put that into it. And Solomon Grundy, mm-hmm. you know, Drew, of all, I talked a lot of great stuff about Robin Lord Taylor. I mean, all sidebar here, like everyone I've spoken to from Gotham, every single person I've talked to from this show is just outstanding. Like, I've met people from other shows and other movies and all these other things that I've talked to, and I've talked to a lot of good people, but every single person that I've spoken to or met from Gotham has just been a wonderful human being. And I think Drew Powell, almost as much, if not more than anybody,
yeah,
is
you and him go back and forth on Twitter
a
lot.
And I met him for the first time face-to-face at the Heroes and Villains that we were talking about last year, and he was just so great at talking to people, interacting. He plays guitar and he just gets up on stage and plays his music and interacts with people. And he's just the nicest dude. And so when he got to be Solomon Grundy, I was so hyped for him. And we talked a lot about that. And it was a lot of fun for him to kind of go back and forth with, you know, from being Butch to then being Grundy. And it was such a, like, when you look at it, it was such a goofy looking Grundy when you're
mm-hmm.
expecting this big monster from the comics, but it worked for Gotham. It was that balance of campy and creepy, and they towed that line, and I thought he was just like, he was such a great comedic relief, but he was also had the potential to be so crazy and scary. And I thought that was just the perfect character for this season, you know, and the partnership with him and Nygma, where Nygma isn't the Riddler anymore, and he kind of has this Bozo who he used to just trash on all the, I mean, he was awful to what was his name before I just said it? Before he was Grundy, to Butch.
Butch.
And then turn around and oh, you don't remember anything? I'm actually your best friend.
Right.
And that whole twisted story and Butch's journey, and then now Tabitha coming back into it, who Tabitha, I think, is one of the most underrated characters in the show, you know, because she wasn't, when Barbara came in, it was, oh man, is she Harley? There was so much conversation with Barbara, and there was so much going on with the Riddler and with Cat, you know, well, not Catwoman, but with Selina and all this stuff. But Tabitha kind of flew under the radar, and I think she's a really, really compelling character. And just everything about this pod has been really cool to me, and Bruce's rise and then fall even deeper. You know, this show doesn't like make me emotional very often, but like at the very end of the season when, or the mid season, when Bruce is telling Alfred off and like Alfred's trying so hard to be Alfred, like that really got me.
Dude, it's, yeah, that was really good. You know,
I think a lot of times we take Alfred for granted, but like Sean Pertwee has come along and like low key become one of the best Alfreds.
Absolutely.
If not the best Alfred ever.
And I've talked,
so good.
I've talked to Chris about this multiple times. I'm not a Batman fan, and I never have been. And I've always been, you know, a huge Iron Man fan. And, like, this, Gotham story of Batman, and, like, the whole origin and everything. And then I just played Tall Tales Batman on the PlayStation. And those two are by far my favorite Batman. And, like, it's really hard to pick one. And I feel like it's because of the Alfred on this show. That's gotten me so much in love with this.
Yeah, I think he portrays Alfred. I mean, I think that everyone that, like, I can't look at anyone that's played Alfred and be like, oh, that was bad. Because, you know, you had in the Tim Burton Batman movies, you had the older, you know, Alfred, and he was great for being Alfred. He was, and then I think Michael Caine really brought another level to it, and everyone loved Michael Caine. I really like Jeremy Irons as Alfred, but I think that Sean on this show, because he gets to be a little bit younger, and he doesn't just get
he's not the side character,
right? You don't just see Alfred as the old butler. He's Bruce's dad,
right?
And there's really, even though they don't use the terminology a lot, you really get this story of adoption and being with someone who's not your biological parent, and how they care for you and how you respond to them, and it just adds another layer to the show that I think no other Batman property has really captured, because we haven't gotten to see this. You know, I mean, Batman Year One, you know, hinted at it because you got this young Batman, but I think that, you know, this portrayal of Alfred brings a new level to it that just elevates the show beyond what it could be without him.
Now, you touched, Charlie, a while ago on Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think they're going to reconcile not having she and Gordon together so it eliminates the traditional Batgirl origin?
I mean, I think it's one of those that, I don't know, because there's a million ways they can go with this. And I think that I already thought it was weird that Barbara's mom's name is Barbara. You know, like, not that it matters. It's just because dudes do it all the time. There's no reason why a woman can't name her daughter the same thing that her name is.
Right.
But it just, it's different. And I, at this point, obviously, I'm not like, oh man, and Barbara's fit to be a mother. Like, she's insane. And, you know, Jim has low key become like the man around town in Gotham. Like, what important woman on this show has he not gotten with? Which doesn't seem like a traditional Commissioner Gordon. And when you're watching the relationships, you don't feel that way. But then you're like, Jim, like, you get around, dude.
Right.
And he definitely has a type.
Yeah. And they're all, I mean, they've all been crazy except for, I mean, which Lee has her own brand of crazy, but that wasn't her fault.
Right.
You know, Lee is, I think, one of the true heroes in the show, in my opinion. You know, aside from the touch virus version of Lee, I think that she, like, especially this season, she's taken that, like, oh, I'm going to run this clinic for poor people. It's like, oh man, a heroic thing. Look at that. Someone is doing that, and they're not just like doing it because good is good. They're like, want to actually be a hero to people. which I think, you know, at times that can be the one complaint about Gotham, is there aren't any true heroes, because, I mean, Jim is such an archetype of this, I am good, and that is it. And, you know,
but here heroes I am making are a deal with the Penguin, and...
And Batman, you know, Batman's a troubled hero, and I think that Lee embodies that. But that's a whole different conversation. I think that they can divert from the traditional Batgirl storyline, or it can just happen after the show ends and no one's the wiser. But also they can find a way for Barbara to come back into Jim's life. I think it's hard because everyone talks to everyone in Gotham, no matter how big the city is. Everyone always runs into everybody. And I think that any one of them could end up being Barbara's mother. But I think when it's all said and done, you have all these crazy people. Barbara could be dead, whatever. If we got to see it go on long enough, we might not even, like, if Barbara Gordon, that we know as Batgirl, ended up being born, we could have this story where maybe Barbara Keene is dead, and Jim has a picture of when times were good and tells his daughter, hey, this is who your mom is, and doesn't tell her anything about who she became. You know, or something like that. Like, I think there are a lot of ways to twist it in there. And I think we're kind of going into season five, we're getting into a place where I think that pregnancies and things like that are going to start being, you know, I mean, there's in shows, like, you get to a point where, like, oh, they're pregnant. You know, Maggie on The Walking Dead being pregnant right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lord, it only took till season two for Lord to be pregnant. But, like, I think that we're kind of entering that, you know, I think Arrow is getting to a close place too. I think that as much as no one really wants it to, like, some Felicity's going to be pregnant before long, and they're getting to that place where, like, you need to re-energize things at times. I don't think Gotham needs to do that, but they're at a place where they can start making those moves to expand through birth. And I think that's one thing that, you know, I talked to a lot of I Skyped with David a couple days before the finale, and he was very much about the idea of Dick Grayson coming back and
that's my favorite Batman character.
Yeah. And using infants to kind of expand the universe and things like that, and people having kids. And I think there's a lot of ways they could bring Barbara Gordon into the world of Gotham. Whether it is from Barbara Keene or not, I think that Jim Gordon having a child is really not a surprising thing at this point with his track record.
Now, do you think we'll ever see the show running long enough where we see Gordon as commissioner? Do you think that's, like, in season or, like, even in scene where inaugurated as it? Or how do you see that?
I don't think it's out of the question. I mean, we barely ever see the commissioner in the show anyway.
Right.
You know, he's captain now.
One step
and
closer.
And I think that it's one of those, it kind of goes either way for me, because at this point he runs the police department. Like, who tells Jim no at this point?
I don't think anybody's ever told him no,
Harvey.
Anyways.
Besides Harvey, he's like, no, Jim, don't do this. Like, everyone tells, just does what Jim says most of the time. So even when they disagree with him, they just let him do it. So he's basically running the police department anyway. And with Sophia in charge of stuff, like, I mean, he could be commissioner whenever he wanted to. I don't think it would be a stretch for the show to do at any point. I do think it'll be like a final arc type of thing where he gets inaugurated again, very much like the end of Dark Knight Rises, where it kind of sets things up. I think you're going to see that at the end of Gotham, where we have Commissioner Gordon and we finally see Selina say Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, unlike Jerome, you know, the Joker doesn't have a true identity. Unlike that situation, all these other characters, like, we know that Enigma is the Riddler, and that's why they've said it. You know, Oswald is Penguin, and they've said it. Selina hasn't necessarily said Catwoman, but, like, she had that whole thing last season where she fell out of the glass and the cat slicked her wounds, and it was very much Michelle Pfeiffer.
With her whip this season as well.
Like, she's definitely going to be that because she's Selina Kyle, and we know that. That's the same reason we know Bruce Wayne will be Batman. Even if he doesn't say Batman, we know what that is. You know, and I think it'll be one of those situations where we see the end of the series, and I wouldn't put it past them if they kind of end it with, like, a future Flash thing, and they bring in, like, bigger name actors to, like, be Bruce and Selina grown up or whatever. Like, I mean, this show has been so crazy that I don't think there's anything off the table.
Right.
But I do kind of see it at the end of, like, oh, yep, here is who everyone is. And then kind of ending it with, here's Batman, and then being done.
Now, this show is definitely one thing that they are extremely great at. There's a few of those things, but one thing is just in the casting of the characters. They seem to hit on that pretty much every time out. That said, do you think that the recasting of Ivy that they're going through now, was that something that was planned from the get-go, or had they just not quite found the one that they want as they're going along, and this is just how they're dealing with it?
Well, that's something that I like. The reason when I talked to Brian Winbrandt this past season, the reason that I wanted to speak with him was specifically about that, because we were getting this new Ivy, and I didn't understand really why, because I liked Maggie Gale a lot. And from what I understand from talking to them, it was very much when they got rid of the girl, it's because they wanted a more adult Ivy. And I could see why they wanted that. Even though it was a little weird when it was like, she got treated like a sexual object at times. Like, let's remember, she's like a 12-year-old in her head, but you know, we're moving on. And
don't worry about that.
Yeah. Like, they're just like, don't worry about it. It's fine. It's Gotham. Things are weird. I get it. You know, they kind of have cell phones and kind of don't.
Right.
And so, like, it's kind of in that age where, like, not everyone has one, but it's not like those big clunky phones where not everyone had one. Like, Jim has a flip phone, but, like, they still have, like, turn dial. So, anyway, it's fine. They kind of have this weird time period that's not... I mean, it's kind of like they have this time period that's not defined, because that's the way to keep it weird. And I like that, but also, like, I get caught up in, why doesn't, like, anyone have a phone? Anyway, like, Bruce is a billionaire. Where is his... cell phone. Sorry, I bleep me out. I said a bad word. I didn't mean to do that. I got on a rant. I apologize. I can do that over if I need to.
No, you're fine.
So, you know, I get caught up in that. But anyway, I see why they wanted to get an older Ivy. And from what they said about going forward is they wanted to evolve her again. I think the idea came, Chris, not at the beginning of the show, but not with Maggie Gia either. I think it came with the switch to Maggie Gia, and when that worked really well, they looked at Ivy as a character that can continue to evolve, much like a plant does. Like, it changes as it goes along. And I think that in different, you know, with Selena, she's growing into being Catwoman. But right. With Ivy, it's this continual change, because we've seen so many different kinds of Ivy in the books. And so you had this fun kind of teen goofy Ivy that was Maggie Gia, and she was really fun at that. But the Ivy that people know, I think, best from the comics is this, like, witchy, seductress, you know, cunning, intelligent Ivy. She's very much a planner, and she is very much a manipulator, and she can be very cold. And I think that that's what they wanted to do going forward. And that, I understand, like, that's not Maggie Gia. I liked the Ivy she was, but I see them saying we want to evolve her even more, and she kind of gets more power. She's going to have some powers from the comic. I mean, she's not going to, like, grow vines out of her hands or anything, but she's going to have some abilities that she didn't have before that she has in the comics. And with those changes, I think they kind of wanted to mark, oh, now we're going to change again, and they're switching up actresses to say this is a new Ivy, this is a new version of Ivy, and that way you can kind of end with, you can incorporate the different kinds of Ivy from the comics. And I like, at least this time, unlike when they went from the child to Maggie Gia, I'm sorry, I can't remember the kid's name, I need to look her up because I feel bad I keep saying the child Ivy, but they, when they flipped to her, it was just like, oh, we thought she was dead and now she's not. With this, they gave her very much a, oh, look, Ivy's going through a change. And so when she comes back, there's going to be a realization that she has physically transformed as well as mentally and emotionally. And so while I like what Maggie Gia did, I also see where the creators are coming from. And I think that their plan, maybe not from the beginning, but for a while, has been to keep changing things up with Ivy, because that's kind of a wild card they can play with.
Right.
So, you know, we're coming down to our last little part of this interview. What, last question for Gotham, pretty much. Is there anything you can share about the second half of the season? I know you can't say some things. You know, do you know when it's actually coming back? Do you know,
so,
plot lines, stuff like that?
I mean, we know a few plot lines, and I mean, there are a couple. They're not new now. You know, I got to do some little scoop stuff when I talked to the producers and earlier on, you know, in 2017 about the back half of the season. So it was new then, but you know, I know that we're getting this Jerome and Penguin partnership, and that's going to be a really big part of the back half of the season. You know, seeing them partner up and kind of take over Arkham. And that's really cool to me because it's, you know, Penguin is all order and Jerome is all chaos, and that's going to be a really beautiful disaster. but we're going to see Grundy now with Butch back in his head, and we're going to kind of see these him fighting it out who he really is. And you know, Bruce and Alfred. Bruce is going to dip even lower than he did before, but he's going to rise back up even more from that. And what David Mazouz told me when we spoke was that we are going to kind of get this version of Bruce that is going to start acting more like Batman because he's going to realize he can't do anything else. So once he kind of hits his low, which he hasn't hit yet, which is a little concerning, Gotham's going to come to a point, the Gotham City is going to come to a point where they don't have anyone to turn to, and Jim can't do it himself anymore. And I think we're finally going to see this team up, which we kind of hinted at the beginning of the season, between Bruce and Jim, where Bruce kind of steps up to be a hero because he needs to, and not just in this, I fight, you know, things in the alley by myself. He's going to work with Jim, and whether Jim knows it or not, that remains to be seen. I don't know if it's going to be one of those, they're true partners and he reports to Jim and there's a bat signal or whatever, but it's going to be he's going to work in line with what Jim is doing because he knows that he has to, you know, fix things in order to, like, and he has to help in order to fix things in Gotham. And so I think there's going to be a lot of that. We're going to see Ivy kind of mess with his mind a little bit. I think that's going to be a big part of her story. And I think we're going to, for Jim, the biggest thing for Jim is he's going to get back in this complicated existence of his, because we're seeing Sophia and Lee and Barbara all interacting, and like, that's just not going to be good for Jim in any way.
That's
going to
be unfortunate for him.
And still, I mean, now this was kind of a curveball to me lately, but we have Scarecrow is supposed to be coming back. There have been casting reports about a Scarecrow, and it's not going to be Charlie Tahan who played him at the beginning of the season. I think it's going to be more of I don't think he's going to take the mask off or anything. It's going to be a full-on Scarecrow. Even though I really liked how Charlie Tahan played him. But when I talked to Charlie Tahan after his second episode, he was very much, oh, yeah, I don't know if I'm coming back. I don't know. He was very non committed, and it kind of sounded like he wasn't quite as invested as anyone else was. So I think it was just getting someone that's going to be in the mask and just be crazy Scarecrow, and not be Jonathan Crane becoming Scarecrow. But that's going to play into the back half of the season, and I'm not sure about that in what capacity. And I do know that whether there's a season five or not, they are going to end the season in a cliffhanger. So I don't know if it's going to be a similar cliffhanger to like Grundy last season, which was a super cool surprise, or if it's going to be a different do they or don't they type of cliffhanger. Because last year was kind of a cliffhanger, but it was very much a concluded thing. Like if the show ended after season three, it would have had a conclusion. They left things open, but like there was enough to know how it ended. So I don't know if it's going to be a similar cliffhanger, or it's going to be more of a what happened, I have to know type of thing. But there will be a cliffhanger to end season four. So we'll see. We'll see what that does. But with Jerome involved, like anything could happen. I don't know if he's going to be in the whole season or just have one arc like he did last year, but
he's still filming with Shameless right now, because I mean, that's still on the air going on and everything as well.
Yeah, I think he's finished, unless he's back filming the new season, because he's been in New York filming Gotham. He's posted a couple of things on Instagram. Like they go on a big break because they're not. That was the other question you asked. They're not, it'll be probably March before we see them again.
Good call.
There is not a definitive return date yet, and like with. It gets thrown off because it's on a regular Big Four network. And this year, a lot of those shows aren't coming back until the beginning of March. But all of the superhero shows are coming back earlier than that on the CW. And so I think that throws people off. Oh, Arrow's back. Where's Gotham?
Right.
It's going to be coming back with the rest of the shows. When I emailed my connection over at Fox about getting an interview, she's very much like, hey, we're on break. You know, we'll get back in touch when it's close to the season coming out. We don't have a date yet, but I'm pretty sure that they're thinking right there at the beginning of March, and that's why we haven't heard anything yet. It's because they're still nailing down exactly when. And that leads me to believe, like, not leads me to believe, but it makes me curious whether or not they'll stay on Thursday nights. I think they will, just because it's been a whole season of that now. But I think they are looking at the schedule to see what they're going to do with it, because, I mean, Gifted will
be over by then.
So I'm sure they have
this Monday.
Sure, they have another plan to put something there already, but I think they're still playing with exactly when they want Gotham to go in order to get the most out of it. Whether that just be, oh, if we run at the end of March, something else will be done and we might have a better shot, or if we want to move it tonight. I would put money that it stays on Thursdays, but I think there are conversations about how they're going to air the rest of the season. But it is coming back. It just won't be for another month and a half, probably.
It's kind of nice though that they're coming back at that time, because it means fewer weeks without new episodes once they do start. So,
which that's what I kind of CW is doing this really unique thing this year that I'm really excited about. They're switching up with Legends and Supergirl because of the way they want to air stuff, and because they have a lot of shows right now, and because Black Lightning, which I've seen two episodes of Black Lightning, it's really, really good. That's the one that I will probably be watching every week on the CW. The only weekly CW show that Riverdale and Legends are the ones that I keep up with, but Black Lightning is really good. I did not expect it to be good because the trailers didn't do a lot for me, and neither does his costume, but the character work in those shows is really good. And because they got that coming in that Tuesday night slot when Legends has been airing, they're going to go with Supergirl. It's coming back on Monday, and it's going to be running for a month and a half or so, or a month. And then in February, Supergirl's going to stop airing for like 9 weeks or 8 or something. And instead, Monday nights at 8 o'clock is going to be Legends of Tomorrow. And that's going to air and finish its entire season. And which Legends doesn't run as long as like Supergirl and Flash and them do. And then when Legends is done, Supergirl is going to come back and finish its season. And so there's like, I forget how many consecutive, like 20 some consecutive weeks of CW shows on Monday night at 8 o'clock with no breaks because of the way they're scheduling it. And so it lets it actually run a little bit longer in addition to helping free up the schedule. And so I think that's really cool. They're doing that. And like you mentioned, with having less weeks without new episodes, I think that's pretty cool. Like, they're going to get that time slot with CW is going to go into June. So, you know, past sweeps, which almost never happens. And so I think it's, if Gotham runs a little bit later, I'm not upset about it, because you can kind of go into summer and give me less of a break in the off season. So, you know, I think they're finding new ways. Like, things like Netflix and Hulu are forcing a lot of these networks to think outside the box, which sometimes I can get frustrated with the way Netflix does things, but I really do like how it pushes the envelope in terms of how it affects every other network. You know, they have to do different things in order to keep up. And I think that scheduling is one of the things that these networks are really starting to think about and try and innovate, because it used to be you almost never had summer shows, and now it's, oh, there are specific summer shows and they're a little wackier and not as good as regular shows. And then it's become, okay, we can do 13 episodes and not whine about it. Like, we don't have to do 22 of everything, and we can let things go into the summer, and we can do things just in the spring. You know, The Good Place is only 13 episodes long, but it's perfect. And so they're allowing themselves to be different. And I think that really, more than anything, helps the superhero shows on TV, like Gotham or Legends of Tomorrow, or things that can be silly. It gives them more freedom.
Now, you know, that's all of Gotham and everything. Now, this is where you can shamelessly plug yourself. What do you have coming up? And what cons could we expect to see you at?
I actually don't know the answer to that. You know, I think
come on, Charlie.
We run, you know, we do a lot of not last minute. I mean, we prepare, but it's not like we don't know a year out in advance. Like, it's kind of who is scheduled to be at this convention and who's going to be speaking at it, and what opportunities do we have to get something from someone and get, you know, content that we can use. And then we decide whether to go or not, you know. And, you know, BD does such a great job, and he has for so long, at being at set visits and junkets and things like that. he's kind of the first man up, you know, and so he goes through a lot more than I will, which is, I mean, he's really good at it. That's where he shines. And so you'll see his face. It does a lot more than you will mine. But, you know, I'm hoping at least with things like Gotham, you know, I'm got interviews, you know, almost every week when the show comes back up. So I don't know who I'm going to be talking to, but I've likely got one all the time, because I've kind of built up a good relationship with them, and I'm hoping I'll have Cameron Monaghan this season. So that'll be great. Things, you know, like that. I've been doing a little more Riverdale stuff. I had an interview with Roberto, the showrunner, and I think I've got some stuff coming up for the premiere this week. And then this isn't a plug for me, but there's a show coming on Stars. If anyone has Stars, it's called Counterpart, and it starts next Sunday. I think the first episode's on the Stars app now, but it stars J.K. Simmons, and it is one of the best shows I've seen in a long time. They sent us the first 6 episodes, and it's like a sci-fi. There are 2 dimensions or whatever, and it's like a spy thriller though, but in like, there's an alternate parallel universe where like everyone has a copy in the other, on the other side. But like when the universe was created during the Cold War, things started fresh on the other side. And so your other could be totally different from you. And so J.K. Simmons stars as like the 2 lead roles. Mm. And it's really, really cool. It's kind of like Fringe, but it's like a Cold War spy thriller of Fringe.
Oh, I'm going to have to
get into that. It's so neat. Yeah. And so I watched the first couple episodes, and I spoke with the showrunner, Justin Marks, yesterday, and he is such an inspiration to me. And because he's like 35 or 37, and he's a showrunner on a J.K. Simmons show on Stars. Like, he wrote the Jungle Book live action movie. For a long time, he was kind of an unknown writer. He didn't do a lot, but he has come out the past couple of years and just been awesome. And so I got some good stuff coming from him this week that I'll be writing up. He's actually got a really, there's a lot of stuff in the news. You know, they talk about writers' rooms on TV, and I talk with him a lot about his writers' room, where he's one of only 2 guys in his writers' room from season 1. He hired a lot of women, female writers, and it shows. Like, they did a really fantastic job. They have a really awesome female villain. She's just this lethal assassin named Bald, and she's one of the coolest villains I've seen on TV in a while. And a lot of cool stuff from that interview. As far as cons and things go, I mean, I'll probably be the Nashville Film Festival this year. That's not as nerdy, but I like to go to that. And I just actually, last night was the deadline for the screenplay competition, and I submitted my feature into that. I did some finishing up yesterday, and hopefully I'll be able to participate in and be a finalist in that. We'll see.
That's okay. I didn't want to be an extra or anything, so it's fine.
Well, no, it was just a screenplay competition, so I haven't actually filmed it.
Oh, okay, good.
I just wrote it. So like, all I did was write it. And so, I submitted the screenplay for a competition. So we'll see how that goes. You know, I'm sure, I don't want to, you know, cross my T's and dot my I's too quick. I'm sure I'll be at San Diego this year.
Last year was your first time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was my very first time in California, actually. I've been to a lot of places, but I've never been to California until I went to San Diego. And then I went back like a week and a half later. I went to San Francisco for Coco. Which was, if you didn't see Coco, it was one of the best movies of the year.
I've heard that generally from everybody.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm really crossing my fingers that I can be back at Pixar for something for Incredibles, because that's
a dream.
Ever.
Yeah, that's so, a dream right there.
I'm hoping I can be at that. I would love to go up to the Gotham set this year. You know, it's all a waiting game to see what happens and what comes up. But you can count on me to be on comicbook.com all the time, and be, you know, when Gotham comes back, I'll be all over that. I'll be all over Walking Dead when it comes back. You know, Brandon handles it by himself pretty much when the show's off, but when it's in season, I do a lot there with him. You know, the ones you guys will get, like the stuff around here, the Heroes and Villains and the Walker Stalker in Nashville, I can guarantee you I'll be at those, because it doesn't cost us anything to go. You know, we can get passes for free and then just drive over there. And so I know I'll be at those. I will be around town, online, you know, I'll be all over the place doing, hopefully it's a very eventful 2018, you know, with the coverage stuff I've got going on. I'm hoping I'll be all over the place online, but hopefully I can transfer that to all over the place in real life as well. But
be flying on a plane every other day like Brandon does.
Oh, I wish, man. I like going different places, you know. He's very, very good at it. And so, yeah. There's no fault in him being sent anywhere because he's a master at that stuff.
Now, are there any other charities you support that, you know, people can contribute to? What's your go-to charity? And that'll be the last question for our show.
Go-to charity. I don't have a go-to charity. I think it's I'm a very much in the moment kind of person.
Right.
Like, okay, here's an opportunity that I see and I want to give to that. I don't have something that I continue to give to every, you know, like a certain group that every month I cut a check to or whatever. The one thing that is close to my heart, I think I kind of touched on this a little bit earlier with the Bruce and Alfred story in Gotham, but adoption is something I very much speaks to me. You know, I'm not adopted, but that's something my wife and I have talked a lot about. That's something I know that is in our plan in the future is to adopt. And right now, James Frazier, who is he's the founder and he runs FanFest, so he does Heroes and Villains.
Yeah, we've I think Chris, you've talked to him once or twice before.
I've tried to, yeah.
he's a good dude. I've met him a couple times, and he and his wife are adopting a special needs girl from China right now, and they're doing a little fundraiser online.
Awesome.
They're selling T-shirts, and it says "My superpower is adoption," or "My superpower is being adopted." But it's photo, or it's like four square pictures on it, and it's of four superheroes, and I believe it's Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, and the Flash, and it's "My superpower is being adopted," which is cool because all of those characters were adopted,
right?
And so here are these superheroes that, you know, are things everyone looks up to in the world. Okay, it says adoption is my superpower. Anyway, so they're trying to raise money to get what they need to take care of this little girl and to bring her home because she has special needs. And so they're selling these T-shirts online. What's this adoption is my superpower? It's like that's the thing lately that I've – like that was the most recent thing that I've, you know, shelled out for because adoption is just a very – a thing that's very close to me. So I don't have a specific thing I can say, oh yeah, that's where we should give money to, or this is where we should give money to. But anything with those with kids that, you know, don't have the ability to just go home, and that's no fault of theirs. And you know, so when there are people and there are organizations that are trying to give those kids the chance that I had, I think that's top of my list in terms of what I want to give to.
Well, fantastic. Well, again, this is our newest episode of Hero Craving Special, and thank you so much, Charlie, for coming out, recording with us, and you're spending some time of your nice snowy Tennessee day with us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
No, dude, I thanks for having me. Seriously, I was really excited when Tyler sent me a message and asked, you know, to be on here because I, you know, Chris, I haven't met you yet, but I've met Tyler, and I don't think I've met you yet. I'm bad with faces. you know, I've spoken with Tyler a couple times, and it's been really great. And I was more than happy to come out. You know, when I'd love to talk again, maybe when Gotham wraps up, or if there's another show that takes off, that anytime. You know,
oh,
I'm happy to sit and chat with you guys literally anytime. You know, I like y'all, so whenever we can do something, I'm down.
Yeah, I think maybe when the seasons are up, maybe we can talk about Gotham and Black Lightning.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I'm super into. So definitely more than happy to sit down and chat.
Awesome. Well, you can follow nerdwide.com on Twitter at @nerd_wide. You can follow me personally at @ty_Haynes. And you can follow Chris at @MavTN7. And Charlie, what is your Twitter handle?
It's just @CharlieRidgely. So @CharlieRidgely.
Awesome. And of course, you can follow comicbook.com on all of their social media sites and pure fandom, pop culture, WWG. You can follow all of them on there. Charlie's got his hands, well, his toes full in all of them, as you heard earlier. So as always, thank you for letting us fill your ear canals with our voices, and we cannot wait to talk to you next time.